Okay, Rabosai. My only challenge is that I don't own a Gemara Sota. What is this over here? Oh, you have a Gemara Sota for me? Oh, thank you, Yaakov. I appreciate that.
This is
Yeah, that's not going to help me right now. So, Rabosai, if I could trouble you to open up to Daf Vav Amid Beis. And we'll try to gradually move into a sugya, which is called Eidim Zomimim. Are you familiar with that? Yeah. So, but let's give a little bit of the background here in order to understand Eidim Zomimim and its relationship here to this sugya Daf Vav Amid Beis. There's a Mishnah later on in Sota on Daf Chav Beis, and the Mishnah describes various cases in which they found out that she should not drink from the Mechatos. And the problem with this is what we call the Minchas Sota. Now, the Minchas Sota, which has to be brought within the context of the implementation of Sota after Kiddush Stira, has a double Kiddusha, it has a double sanctity to it. Anybody here know what those two dimensions of sanctity are called? Should I write this on the board, just to make sure that we're on the same page here?
Yes.
Okay. So if you follow what I'm writing here, this is a great introduction to, I would say, 1/6 of Shas. There's something called Kiddushas HaGuf, and then there's something called Kiddushas Domin. Now the reason I'm writing this on the board is because I have no doubt in my mind that everyone sitting here is going to write this down in their notebook. Right? I'm being a little cynical because I know you guys don't take notes. But if in theory you would take notes, then you would write this because this would be a key to unlock so much of Shas. Let's start with number two, which is called Kiddushas Domim. Kiddushas Domim applies to anything. By the way, I am wearing a suit. I just want you to know that. Just that these pants are protecting me from the water, from the rain. So if I take off my pants, it's not because I'm stripping publicly, it's only because I want to show you that I'm wearing a suit underneath these pants. Anyway, but having said that, because my wife would say, how are you standing here with these knock-around pants? So having said that, we have something called a Kedushas Domin. Kedushas Domin means that an object is considered Hegdesh with Domin. Which means that the object in and of itself is not hegdesh. The object is only a monetary value. It represents value. Anybody know how to say value in Hebrew?
Erech.
Erech, or in the Gemara's language, shovi. 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 So what this is a person who designates something as hegdesh because of its shovi. So it's really not the physical object that you're looking at. If you have a precise, inceptive vision, then you go beyond the surface, and that object has a market value. And what you're giving to Hegdesh is its value. Now, we have something in Hegdesh that goes way, way beyond that, that's much more profound. And that's called Kiddushas HaGuf. Kiddushas HaGuf means that what I give to Hegdesh and what I designate thereof is not a representative of its shavius, of its value, but rather every fiber, so to speak, of that object is kadosh. Now here here are the two differences. Number one, which we'll get to as we go along the line, is something called pidyon, right? Pidyon means that I redeem something, which means I can transfer the Kedusha from object A to object B. Now, in this case of Kedusha has Damim, this pigeon, because the object itself is not really Kadosh, it's only representative of its value. So all I do is take its value, I take out some euros, I put it on the table, and I transfer the Kedusha from the object to the Damim, meaning to the euros, because the object itself is only representative of its value. So now I just transfer its value over to the Damim. In the case of Kedushas HaGuf, there ain't no pigeon. There's no such thing as pigeon in Kedushas HaGuf. And the reason for that is because you cannot take away the Kedusha from the object when it's inherent in the object. The second Afkimina is what's called Klei Sharis. Now, this is specifically applicable to something that has Kedushas HaGuf. Kedushas HaGuf is always generated if you take something and you put it into a Klei Sharis. Those are the holy vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. If you want to see a picture of them, you'll go to Rome and you'll see the Arch of Titus. You'll see a picture of the Klei Sharis as the Romans take it after they pillage our Mikdash, those bums, right? So that's called Klei Sharis. Now, in the case of a Karban Mincha, what we have is an overlap of these two Kedushas. Why? Because before you put the flour into the Klei Sharis, you designate it for the Mincha. So that's called Hegdesh, meaning, but it's Hegdesh only at the level of what? The lower level Kedushas Damin. However, in stage number two, you take the flour after you amagdish it, you put it into a Klei Sharis. And then you mix it, you do blila and all sorts of things for that. You have to learn Masech ben Menachos. Now, all this is relevant to the case of a sota, because the sota has to bring a karma mincha, which is called a mincha sota, otherwise known as a mincha knos, if you've ever heard that phrase. So we're now in a stage that's after kinui and after stira. And now the question is, what happens if, lo and behold, after we did this kiddush process, we find out that she does not drink from the Meimarim, and that the Mincha is not worth a dime? You can't do anything with this Mincha. You can't bring it on the Mizbeach. For example, let's say two witnesses come and testify that she did commit this crime as accused. In such a case, then the Karban Mincha is not brought. So what do we do with this Mincha? Well, it really depends. If we're at the stage number one, we haven't yet put the Karban Mincha into the Klei Sharis, so it only has Hegdesh of Kedushas Damim, then all we have to do is to be Poder the Kedushas Damim. We only have to transfer that Kedusha onto Moz, and then we take that money and we use it for the building of the Beis HaMikdash or Bevedek HaBayis, whatever we do with it. But if we've already gotten to stage two, and at this particular moment we've already taken the flour and put it into the Klei Sharis, then we've upgraded the level of Hegdesh from Kedushas Damim to what? To Kedushas HaGuf. And now, lo and behold, we find that this was meaningless, that this is an invalid karban. So that requires what's called Sreifa, which means we have to burn it. We have to set it on fire. So in this case, that two witnesses came to testify that she really was guilty as accused, then depending upon what stage we're at in the Karban Mincha, we can decide whether pigeon would be effective. If we're at stage one, in which the Mincha was designated, but it hasn't yet been placed into what? Help me out here. Into a Klei Sharis, then pigeon would be meaningful. But if on the other hand, we've already gotten to the stage where this Kedusha is done and we placed it into a Klei Sharis, then it requires what? Sreifa. And therefore a pigeon is totally inappropriate. Now here we have a sheet of Rav Papa. Rav Papa has a unique sheet. Rav Papa says that even in a case where technically you're allowed to do pigeon, he doesn't want to do pigeon. And the reason for that is he's worried about the spectator. The onlooker might mistakenly think that this took place after Kedushas Damim, and he's going to come to some conclusion that, I'm sorry, my mistake, that this whole story took place after Kiddush Saguf, after Klishos, and he's going to look at you and see where you're doing Pidyon. And he's going to come to the mistaken conclusion that you could be poed to something even after it was sanctified in the higher level of God of Kiddush Saguf. So therefore, he's going to treat this mincha, even though it is technically only at the level of Kedushas Damim, he's going to, so to speak, upgrade its level of Kedusha as if it were Kadosh B'Kedushas HaGuf, and he's going to exclude Pidyon. Whose sheet is that? You have to know the names here. Papa. That's going to be Rav Papa. So, Rav Papa, give me, Alan, give me 5 minutes, because again, I just want to get myself a little bit, my feet wet in Masechta Sota, because I haven't learned Sota since I was a fetus in my mother's embryo. So a lot of years have gone by since then. So bear with me. Okay then? So take a look at Rav Papa. Rav Papa appears on Daf Vav Amud Beis. And he's going to say that with regard to this Mishnah, which is later on a Daf Chaf Beis Amud Beis, he's going to say that when the Edom came, then we know now that she, you know, that this whole Mincha Sota was just a mistake on our part. So what should we do when the witnesses come? So he says that even though the witnesses came before the Mincha was placed into a klishares, yet the Mishnah says Tisaref, we should burn the Karban Mincha, says Rav Papa, that that's all based on what we call a Gzeiras Chachamim, which means that the Chachamim were worried about the possibility that maybe Yomru means the onlooker would come to the mistaken conclusion that taking out something that was already sanctified in a klishares and they're being poed to it, so therefore we want to treat it on a higher level. Fine. So that's going to be Rav Papa here on Daf Vav Amud Beis. Now, let's talk about the following brisa. So this is where I want to start for today, with your permission. And we're going to count up from the bottom of Daf Vav Amud Beis, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up from the bottom of the page. It starts with the line starts with the word Kipra, if you have that. But we're going to start with the words Bo-La, those words. Does everybody have the place? Yes? Okay, so let's see if we can start with the words Bo-La. This is part of a brisa that we have quoted in the past, earlier on Daf Vav. And the brisa rules that Bo-La Edim Shitmea, when the witnesses come and they testify that she actually had this adultery as accused, minchasa nisrefes, then we burn the mincha. Now the reason why we burn the mincha, presumably, is because you're after the stage of klishares. Well, according to Rav Papa, that's not so, or it's not necessarily so. It could be that the edim show up and they testify that she's guilty even before the mincha is placed into a klishares, and even at the stage of kedushas damim, when Rav Papa would certainly admit that pidyon would be meaningful, but we're going to nevertheless burn this mincha. And why is that? Because the gzera of Rav Papa, and Rav Papa says that what? We're afraid that yomru motziim klishares lechol. Okay, fine. Now the brisa goes on and says the following. Nimtzu edeha zomamin minchasa chulin. Okay, so what happens now? And this brisa is going to be an outright contradiction to Rav Papa. What happens in the following scenario? Two witnesses testified that she committed this crime as accused, correct? So what happened? She violated the kinui, she had stira, and then she had a relationship with this man about whom she had both kinui and stira. Then the witnesses come in and they testified that she had a relationship during, let's just say it's the case of during Stira. Okay. So at this point in time, everything is stopped, correct? We have to completely terminate the process of Sota, and the Minchas Sota becomes Psula. It's disqualified. Now we get to the next stage. After the witnesses testify, we'll call them Reuven and Shimon. They're not related, though. Now, after Reuven and Shimon testified that she committed adultery as accused, so the Kenyan Stira really culminated in adultery, and we were about to assume that the Mincha is therefore Mincha Psula, and therefore we should get rid of it. But now, Levi and Yehuda come into Beis Din. And what do Levi and Yehuda say to the Beis Din?
False witnesses.
What does it mean, false witnesses?
They're lying.
Okay.
They were not at that place.
Right. That, what's that called in Lashon Kodesh? Again, I'm always trying to teach you the Hebrew. This is called Imanu Ha'isem. Now again, you know, in the past, I've very often threatened you that I'm going to come to wake you up in the middle of the night, and you're going to say Zika, or you're going to say consistency, all the different words that we had. This time, I promise you, I'm going to wake you up in the middle of the night, and you're going to say to me, Imanu Ha'isam. Everybody, one, two, three. Imanu Ha'isam. Okay? And I apologize, I treat you like children, but I don't know what you know and what you don't know, so therefore I'm always down with Havchova that you don't know. Imanu Ha'isam. Because if I would ask you what Edim Zomimim are, and you're going to tell me, well, two Edim tell us that they falsified their testimony, that's not an accurate answer. That's not even an answer for a five-year-old in Cheder, you know, in grade one. That's not, that. There's no way that you can tell me, well, these Edim are false witnesses. You can scream from now until doomsday that these Edim are perjuring themselves. That's worthless. When does it become Zomimim? Only with what? Imanu Ha'isam. That's the magic formula. And the Torah says that if the second pair of Edom, we call them Levi and Yehuda, say Reuven and Shimon, you couldn't have possibly have been in Melbourne to see that action, because you were with us in Sydney to see that action. And again, it takes 4 hours to get from Melbourne to Sydney. By plane, it's 10 hours?
Oh, it's only 1 hour by plane.
Oh, 1 hour. Oh, I thought it was 4 hours by plane. Okay, fine. You mean it's 10 hours by car?
Yep. It's 1,000 kilometers.
And you could do that in how much? In by plane in 1 hour?
50.
Wow. Yeah. You guys must have fast planes in this. Because what takes 10 hours in America takes at least a minimum of 2 hours by plane.
Circuitous roads.
Right, but it could be, oh, I see what you mean. Oh, I see, because as the bird flies. Oh, I got you, yeah. Because, for example, to fly from New York to Chicago takes about 2.5 hours. So anyway, so let's get back to this. So it's impossible that you would have seen the crime, as you claim, this adultery right in Johannesburg, because you were with us in Perth, you know what I'm saying, wherever it was. So that's called Imanu Ha'isam. And magic of magic, the Torah says that we believe the second pair of Edom. Now why do we believe the second pair of Edom? We say Imanu Ha'isam and not the first pair of Edom. I don't know. I mean, the Ramban thinks he does know, but we'll get to the Ramban a little bit later on. But logically, you know, it's two against two. You know, it's Reuven and Shimon's word against Levi and Yehuda. I don't know why Levi and Yehuda believe that Reuven and Shimon are not believed, but they're not believed. Why? Because of Imanu Ha'isam. And this is a parsha in Kitetze, which is towards the end of the Chumash, and the Torah says, V'yasisem lo kashazomam lasos liyochiv. So there's a very severe punishment for the first witnesses. I'm afraid to express it because it gets me scared to even express what we're going to do with these first pair of Edim. But those are the Edim ha-muzamim. Okay, so we'll call about, there is the mazivim, and there is the muzamim, which are otherwise known as Edim Zomim, Ayin Zayin, Edim Zomim. So the Mazimim say Imanu Ha'isam, and you couldn't have possibly been witness of the crime. So now what happens is that these Muzamim, now there are two things that happen. One thing that happens is their testimony is completely null and void, and secondly, they will suffer the punishment. But the testimony is certainly null and void. So let's look at the Braisa. The Braisa says that now it's null and void, and Minchas Achulim, that the Mincha now has the status of Chulin. Just one second. So why is the Mincha Chulin? Just one second. So again, the witnesses testified that she was guilty, and now there's Zomimim. So if there's Zomimim, then it turns out that what? That the first pair of Eidim that testified that she was guilty as accused had falsified their testimony, correct? Mm-hmm. So if they had falsified of testimony,
there's no accusation.
She's not a sota.
Why is she not a sota?
She doesn't qualify.
There's only steers.
Again, there was Kini. Oh, they are testifying in Mono Yisim even on the stira. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That's what I got confused. Right, so again, what happens? The two Eidim who testified on the stira, and on the kinu, maybe you can get away with one aid, that's a machlokas tanon. But on the stira, you have two witnesses, and they say that we were with her when she secluded herself with this guy, and she had the action. Well, they couldn't have possibly seen that in Johannesburg because they were with us in Perth. Okay, fine.
What's this here in
Tumalik? Where's Perth?
I'm trying to keep you consistent.
Yeah, where's Perth?
Western Australia.
Oh, it's in Australia. Oh, so that's not a good example.
Well, it's good. It's at least 10 hours away from Johannesburg.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Rabbi,
it's all in that hemisphere, right?
What's this here in Tumalik? Were separate, say, weeks or days later. But they were Edom Zomimim for the Tumah. They're discredited. They can't be witnesses for the Stira.
So again, what happened exactly? What's your case,
John? It's the same witnesses for the seclusion and for the act.
Right.
It turns out that there were false witnesses. They know for the act itself. We don't know about the Tumah. Maybe the kosher witnesses. There's no witnesses to say that they're false. And they're discredited and they can't be witnesses for that earlier stage for the Stira.
Right, again, so one second. How many witnesses do we have on the Tumah?
Two?
And those two witnesses are Muzamim?
The same witnesses.
But I'm asking,
yes.
Before you get to that, but I'm just saying, were they Muzamim, Imanu Yisim on the moment of Tumah? So we don't have Edim on the Tumah now.
Right.
Now, if we don't have Edim on the Tumah, then we don't have a Sota, which is what David was pointing out over here, because in order to get a Sota, you need Edim Tumah, correct? When I say Edim Tumah, it's a little bit confusing. I don't mean on the mice itself, on the act of adultery. What I mean is on the fact that she secluded herself. You're right. I shouldn't call it Edim Tumah. I should call it Edim Stira, correct? So there's Kinui and there's Stira. If the Edim Tumah are the Edim Stira, and they couldn't have been there to see the crime, then she's not a Sota, correct? And if she's not a Sota, what should be the status of the Mincha?
There are halakhic ramifications, because you might get caught, she might do it again, there might be other witnesses for Tumah another time.
If there are other witnesses, then you're right, then the carbon, but I don't know if we're going to keep the carbon in abeyance, you know, we're going to say, well, it, you know, maybe she is a Sota because we'll get another pair of Edim. Right now we don't have Edim on the Tumah. If we don't have Edim on the Tumah, then we don't have Edim on the Stira, because again, they're testifying that during the course of the Stira, she had this relationship, so the Tumah and the Stira took place at the same time. They couldn't have seen that, because the Torah says we believe the second pair of Edim, not the first pair of Edim. And now we have no witnesses for the Stira. If there are no witnesses on the Stira, then what do we do with the Mincha?
But if there are witnesses, she's not a Sota. If there aren't witnesses, she is a Sota.
Well, again, you must have testimony on the stira that she secluded herself. We don't even have testimony on the stira, because those two Edim who testified that she secluded themselves turned out to be Edim Zomimim.
So they're discredited on the stira as well.
They're discredited on the stira, correct? Because they're testifying that at that moment of stira, she had this adultery.
So keeping new company.
So as a result, Alan, if you don't have Edim on the stira, she's not a Sota. If she's not a Sota, the Mincha is not a Mincha Sota, because she's not a Sota. And therefore the Braisa says, Minchasa Chulin. Chulin means that the Hekdesh is completely gone. Now here the Gemara has a kash on Rav Papa. Because Rav Papa says that even if the Mincha is not valid, but we have to worry about the onlooker. The onlooker doesn't know. Right, let's see it inside. The Gemara says the following. Minchasa Chulin. Oh, so what happened to the Gzeira? Let's go back to the Gzeira of Rav Papa. Shemi Yomru Motziim Chle Shares Lechol. Correct? So that should apply here. I'll just read to you a few lines here in the footnote. He says, in the case of this brisa, the minchas sota was erroneously sanctified in a kli shares on the mistaken assumption that we could rely on the witnesses of the seclusion, which means the stira. Yet the brisa rules that the mincha is regarded as ordinary foodstuff, that's called chulin. And this is a shlug up on Rav Papa because he says that the Rabbanim made a gzera that you should burn the mincha. Why? Because once it was sanctified in a kli shares, somebody might come to the conclusion that you could be poda this mincha. So when the Mishnah rules that we burn the mincha of a sota, when the just 1 second. So here he quotes the Mishnah on Chav Beis that we must burn the mincha of a sota should witnesses testify that she in fact committed adultery. And according to Rav Papa, that would apply even before Kiddush Kli, which means even though it only has a Kiddushas Damim, we're not going to allow for Pidyon. And the reason for that is because of the Gzeira of Rav Papa, Shema Yomru, again, what's the language of Rav Papa? Motzi and Kli Shares Lechol, because they don't know that it wasn't yet sanctified on the second level in a Kli Shares. But the Mishnah means that according to even though according to the Torah law, because of a rabbinic decree, in other words, if we reject Rav Papa, so the Mishnah means that we have to burn this mincha. Why? Because since at its time it was fit to be offered, then the sanctification is valid. Okay, so Rabosai, there's a machlokas here between Rav Papa and I don't remember whom.
Rav Shimon,
as to whether or not the Torah law would apply even in a case when we found out that this Karban Mincha was not a valid Karban Mincha, correct? In other words, the witnesses testify that she had committed adultery and therefore she's not a sota, but yet the Chazal up to Rav Papa assumed, and that's the pshat in the Mishnah of Rav Shimon, that we have to burn the Karban Mincha because in its time we were under the impression that she was a sota. So if in its time we sanctified the Karban Mincha, then that sanctification is valid even though we find out subsequently that she's not a sota. In other words, without Rav Papa, what we're going to do in the Mishnah on Daf Chav Beis is we're going to assume that the Kiddush Kli of a sota, if it was done in its time based on all the knowledge that we had and it was a valid Kiddush, do you follow? So it wasn't that we made a mistake in the original Kiddush, so that Kiddush is valid. If that Kiddush is valid, if now the Karban turns out to be invalid, then what do we do with that Karban if the Kiddush is still valid? What do you do with something that has Kiddush HaSaguf and now it became invalid? What do you do with it, everybody? Sreifa, correct. You need Sreifa. So that's the explanation of the Mishnah. Rav Papa says no. Rav Papa says since the Edom come in now and they testify that she was guilty as accused and therefore she's not a sota, now we find out that the original Kiddush was a mistaken Kiddush, although we didn't make any mistake at that time, but now we find out new information. Therefore, says Rav Papa, the Kiddush itself should be null and void. And really, technically, according to Rav Papa, we should be able to be poda this mincha if it was before Kiddush Kli. But the answer is, we're afraid, this is a rabbinic decree, that maybe the onlooker thinks that it was a Karban Mincha with a full-fledged Kiddush, and then you went ahead and you were poda it? So the onlooker is going to come to the mistaken conclusion. So that's Rav Papa. So now let's get back to the case of Edim Zomimim. So now what happens is that we were Makadesh this Mincha, and now we have two Edim that she was guilty. Subsequently, two Edim come in and they testify that what? Imanu Ayisam. And therefore, the Edus of the Edim on Stira, meaning on Tuma, are now, that Edus is now what? Zomim. Is now invalid, correct? Because the Torah says that Edim Zomim, their Edus is invalid. So if their Edus is invalid, now we find out that the Kli what? That the Kli Shares was not a Kiddush. So what are we going to say now? We're going to say now that it's that the Korban Mincha is what? Is Chulim. But according to our Papa, whenever there was a Kiddush, we have to institute a rabbinic decree, a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan Shemi Yomru, that people will say that you're allowed to be Podes, something that was already sanctified in a Kli Sharetz. Now here I have to ask you the following question. Set me straight on this. We just finished saying that if you reject Rav Papa, then the premise is that since we had the information at our fingertips at the time of the Kiddush that would validate that Kiddush, we had every reason to believe that she was a Sota, therefore the Kiddush is valid, and when the Edim come in subsequently, what are we going to do? We're going to invalidate the whatchamacallit, the Mincha, but we have to burn the Mincha. Why? Because there was a Kiddush, correct? So why not apply that same logic here in the case of Edim Zomimim? Meaning, I understand why, according to Rav Papa, the Gemara feels that you should be burning this Mincha because of the Gzeira that people will say that it's a valid Mincha and it already had Kiddush B'Kli Shares, and that Kiddush is valid. But if we reject Rav Papa and we assume that since at the time of the Kiddush all the information that we had was reliable, and therefore she was in fact a Sota, that was the information we had at the time of the Kiddush, then if later on we get new information and we have to invalidate the Mincha, what do we do with the Mincha? We burn it. So why here does the Brisa say Mincha Sachulin? Why is this Mincha Chulin?
Because retroactively she wasn't a Sota.
Excellent. So what's that called retroactively? That's called, again, I always like you to learn the language. I'm sorry. That's called lima freya. Did I write that right? Yeah. Lima freya, retroactively. So what we're going to say is the following. That in truth, what we have here is a real classic Sota, correct? Now, if we have a real classic Sota, then what should be the status of the Mincha? Should it be burnt, right, or not? Well, if the Edim are Edim Zomimim, that means we have no valid testimony
at all
to establish that she had this stira, correct? Mm-hmm. Oh, so then was it fair, so to speak, was it valid halachically to be Makadish the Mincha? Right? Here's a girl, a woman, who doesn't have Ede Stira. Why? Because those Ede Stira are Ede Muzamim. They're Ede Muzamim, correct? So it means there was never a valid Edus on Stira. So if new information comes in, then apparently we have to burn the Minchas Sota. But the Gemara feels that if the information that comes in is to tell me that we made a mistake from the original Kiddush because Lebafreya, we find out that there were never Edim on the Stira, That's a lot different than a case where Adam come in to testify later on that she had this relationship. That doesn't work l'mafreya, but in the case of Adam Zomer, it works l'mafreya. But still, Rav Papa is problematic. Why is Rav Papa problematic? Because he has a gzeirah d'rabbanon. Correct? Okay. Now here I have to ask you two questions. Number one, do we have any clue as to why we believe the second pair of Eidim and not the first pair of Eidim? Is there any logic to that? Anybody want to take a stab at that, John?
I would just think that it's because two witnesses are trusted so long as there's no reason to doubt them.
Right.
So the first two witnesses come along, they give testimonies. They're right. Trusted. You then have another two that come along,
right.
And both of them then give testimony that those are actually false. There's no reason to doubt the second two, so you have to believe them. You have two.
But I'm just asking the following question. Why can't the first pair of Eidim contradict the second pair of Eidim? Say, you're a bunch of liars.
Yeah.
You say that we were with you in Sydney. We were in Johannesburg, or we were in Melbourne, right? So why?
Maybe the testimony of the second set of witnesses would be more easily substantiated. In other words, they said, if you, Levi and Yehuda said, Reuben and Shimon were with us,
right.
There could be other people that saw the four of them together somewhere, whereas the testimony of the first two guys, they were the only ones at that place at that time. They have no sort of corroborating...
judge which is more...
In any particular scenario, you could always envision the possibility that other people will say that you weren't there, you were there. I don't know if there's more of a, are you saying there's more of a chance that, that in fact, I don't know, I'm not sure, think about it. The Ramban wants to take this on. Now, keep in mind, I have another question. We're saying that l'mafreya, retroactively, the first pair of Adam and their testimony is out. Is that really so? Because imagine the following scenario. Let's say Reuven and Shimon gave testimony on the first of the month. And then they gave a whole slew of testimonies during the course of the month. Now we're in February. It's the 1st of February. Two witnesses come in. And they tell us that about the story that you told us on the 1st of January, you were with us in another place. What happens to all the testimonies in between? That's only if you assume l'mafreya. But on this point, we have a machlokes, a gigantic machlokes between Rava and Abaye. Abaye says exactly what you said, that we have to throw out and invalidate all the testimonies that they gave since that January 1st testimony on which they were muzam. Comes along Rava and he says, no, I can't accept that. We had every right to believe that these two Eidim were Ksherim, and now the Torah says, well, we're going to believe the Mazimim. He says, Mikan ula habahu nifsal. Only from now and onwards, all the testimony that they gave until this point is acceptable. Why? Because we're not going to work with l'mafreya. And when the Gemara asks Rava, why don't we work l'mafreya? I mean, after all, they testified falsely on the 1st of January, which means at that point they were already perjurers, they were already Eidim Shakranim, so then at that moment in time, they should be, from that moment to, again, we didn't know that, naively we relied on them, but now we found out. And the Gemara asks, why is it different than a case of Gzela? Let's say, for example, two witnesses would say, not Imanu Ayisem to Reuven Shimon, but say you on the 1st of January you stole a car, right? So you're a Gazlan. A Gazlan is possibly Avis. Everybody agrees, even Rav agrees, that we have to undo and disqualify all the testimony they gave during the course of January, because of Afreya we now know that already from the 1st of January they were Gazlanim, and a Gazlan is possibly Eidim. So are you with me on this? So the Gemara asks, why in this case does Rav insist Mikanu Lahavo Nifsal? They're only possible from February 1st at the moment that the second pair of Eidim say Imanu Ayisem. So Rav answers, Chidush Hu Shechidsha Torah? The Eilachosh Bo Misha El Mishas Chidush of Eilach. What does it mean?
So Rashi, Tosfos, they all come to this, and they say, Chiddush means we have no logical reason why we should believe the second pair of eight. The Torah says we believe them. We're going to believe them from the moment of that Chiddush and on. We're not going to apply the principle of Mafreya. So Bekitzer, to make life simple, Abaye holds that Eidim Zomim became Pasul of Mafreya from the moment of January 1st. And Rava says, no, we only disqualify their Eidus from now on, meaning from February 1st and on, when the Hazoma took place, because Eilach Abo El Mishas Chidush Ovi Eilach. In a machlokas between Abai and Rava, who do we paskin like? Anybody know? I thought you would know this. Okay. This happens to me in my 8:30 class as well. You know, I always assume everybody knows the answer to my question, but... By the way, how many times in Shas, I don't know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. How many times in Shas does Rav and Abaye disagree? So the Vilna Gaon, before computers, says that you can't go six blot in Shas without a machlok between Rav and Abaye. Now I think how many blot there are on Shas? 3,000 and something or other. Anyway, there are a lot of machlokas in between Abaye and Rav. Many, many machlokas. You can't go too far in Shas without a machlok. Have you had any yet in Sota?
I don't think so.
No, you didn't have one? Okay, you probably had one and you didn't notice it. But anyway, we always paskin like Rava against Abaye. Rava against Abaye. By the way, Rava appears on every other daf in Shas probably. How old was he when he died? He was 40 years old. Now, if that doesn't scare the pants off you, I don't know what. I mean, when I think about David HaMelech in Tehillim, the man was a king. He spent most of his life running away from his adversaries. And he authored Tehillim. Died at the age of 70. How can you have possibly have done that in one lifetime? I don't know, it just boggles my brain.
Many of the greats died very young.
But how could... I want you, John, take one psalm, one capital of Tehillim, and I'm telling you, you could probably spend a month trying to understand the meaning of David HaMelech in one capital of Tehillim. There are hundreds of capital of Tehillim. How could one man have authored all of Tehillim? And he wasn't, you know, sitting around writing Tehillim the whole day. He had a very, very busy schedule. If any of you are learning the Daf Yomi, you'll know a little bit about David HaMelech's daily schedule. But anyway, getting back to Rava. Rava dies at the age of 40. Some say that the Arizal died at the age of 33. And all of Tzfat and all the Torah that we have today in Hasidus and in Kabbalah all goes back to the Arizal. How could the man have accomplished that? They say about the Arizal that when he got an Aliyah, when it took him how many minutes to get from his seat up to read the Torah, he chazed all of Shas. Now what that means, I don't know. I think it probably means that, you know, he saw in front of him the concepts of Shas, I don't know. But this is all mystical.
Rabbi Nachman died at 38.
It's unbelievable what people could accomplish in such a short lifetime. It's just beyond. This room that we're in, by the way, right now is called Haley's Corner. Haley was killed in a terrible car, a truck, a bus accident, what is it, about 2.5 weeks ago? Not even that. And what she accomplished in her young lifetime, I mean, this room was where she would prepare the Kiddush for the Amic Learning Center on a weekly basis, every single Shabbos. Anyway, getting back to this question of Lemafreya who nifsal, we paskin like Rav against Abai. But there are six exceptions out of hundreds, if not thousands. One of the six exceptions is Eidim Zomim. And the six are called Ya'al Kagam. Yal Kagam is a mnemonic device to remember the ayin of Yal Kagam, which is the second letter of Yal Kagam, represents Eidim Zomim. And we pass in like Abaye that Eidim Zomim lemafreya hu nifsal. So we're in good shape here in our sugya, according to Abaye. I don't know how Rav is going to interpret this sugya, because Rav holds mikado lahabu nifsal. Now, isn't Rav right when he says that Eidim Zomim is a chidush? So comes along the Ramban, and the Ramban says in his commentary on the Torah in Parashas Ki Tetzeh that I understand Eidim Zomim. I know why the second pair of Eidim are believed and not the first pair of Eidim. He must have had Ruach HaKodesh, but I'm going to share with you what he says. And you could be the jury, you could decide whether you accept it or not. He says the following. There are two categories of testimony. One category is testimony on a sipra maisa, which means that you're telling a story. The other kind of testimony is not a sipra maisa, but when you're saying something about a person and his status. Herein lies the difference between Reuven and Shimon, the first pair of Edom, and Levi and Yehuda, the second pair of Edom. Whereas in the case of Reuven and Shimon, they are testifying on a sipra maisa, they're telling us a story. The second pair of Edom, Yehuda and Levi, they are testifying edus on the gavra. Gavra means on the person. They are testifying when they say imanu ayisem. They're not interested in telling you where these edim were, you know, on the 1st of January at 9 a.m., whether they were in Melbourne or they were in Sydney. That's not relevant to them. They are testifying that these two edim are perjuring themselves. When they say that they were there to see the crime, that is a fabrication of the truth. And therefore, you cannot accept these witnesses as edim. Here, the first pair of edim have no power, no authority to defend themselves. For example, let's say two edim say about this person, he's a gazlan. We know that he stole something. And let's say they say about two people, let's say Shimon and Levi testify that we saw Reuven and Shimon steal something. What happens then? Who do we believe? Anybody know? Reuven and Shimon deny the whole story. This is a libel. This is a blood libel. And Levi and Yehuda say, we were there. We saw you steal someone's car. It's down in Azrael. What?
The second pair. Levi and Yehuda.
Why do we believe the second pair of Edom? Why not believe the first pair of Edom? They deny the whole story. The answer is, because the second Edus is not Edus on a Sipra Maisa. They're not telling us about the theft of the car. They're telling us that these first two Edom, Begavra, are now puzzled. They are disqualified for testimony. And the first pair of witnesses do not have the power to defend themselves because they're on trial. You can put many people on trial. You can have two witnesses that testify against 1,000 people that they were all guilty of one common crime, of one communal crime. The people who are online now, on trial, they cannot serve as witnesses. The Torah doesn't accept them as witnesses because then they're testifying about themselves. They are cautioned to testify about something else. That's called the Sipra Maisa. That's outside of themselves. But they cannot be cautioned when they're testifying about themselves. And herein lies the difference, says the Ramban, between the first pair of Edom and the second. The second pair of Edom are now putting the first two Edom on trial. They are saying that you are Edom that perjured you themselves. You were never there. And the whole story couldn't have happened. Again, maybe the story happened. It's possible. But you couldn't have been there to witness the crime because you were with us elsewhere in a very far off place. They have no right, the first pair of Edom, to defend themselves. Says the Ramban, that's the logic of halacha. Now, if I would tell this over to a guy in a class in political science, right, I minored in college and graduate school in political science, the guy wouldn't know, would have no clue what I'm talking about. The halacha works with its own logic. It's logical, but only within the halachic universe. And I've told you this a dozen times, and I'm going to hack this into you until you finally believe me. Halacha is not anti-logical, but it has its own logic. It's not human logic, it's not rational logic, it's not something that you can convert into symbol, you know, mathematical symbols, it's not something that you can teach to the goyim, but it has its own inner logic. Our problem and our challenge is that we come with our own logic, which is based on Western mathematics and sociology, and we try to look at the halacha and the gemara from our perspective. Like yesterday, I had a guy who accosted me, said, oh, you believe in halacha, and halacha allows a man to have a relationship with a girl who's 3 years old. How can you allow such a thing that's called child rape? And he gave me a whole spiel, you know, made me feel very comfortable, right? But again, the halacha works within its own system. He's coming with Western ideas, and he can't figure out how the Torah could allow a relationship. And many times, you know, Chazal say that Yitzchak married Rivka when she was 3 years old. How could that be? You know, that's molesting, right? So he, because he comes with his Western ideas, the halacha works as a closed system, and Edim Zomim is the most perfect, perhaps, example, if you accept this Ramban, of the inner logic of the halacha. And within the logic of halacha, there are two categories of testimony. In one category of testimony, you'll believe like anyone else's belief. So if somebody says, well, I was there at the time of the crime and Reuven did not kill Shimon. So the first two Edom have a right to contradict. We were there, we saw him kill Shimon. But if the second pair of Edom are not testifying on the Maisa, they don't know whether Reuven killed Shimon or he didn't kill Shimon. All they know is that the witnesses couldn't have been there to see the crime. Then those so-called witnesses would not be believed to defend themselves, because then they're on trial. And that's the psul called Nogea B'Edus. If you've ever heard of that, Nogea B'Edus means I cannot testify about myself. So again, even though Rava yells and screams in Masechta Bava Kama that Edim Zomim is a chidush, and we don't know why the Edim Zomim are possible, and therefore the Edim Zomim are only possible in Chabo Mishas Chidusha from the moment that they became Edim Zomim and onwards, and therefore he rejects the principle of Lamafreya, we Paskin in this case is one of six exceptions to the rule, six over thousands, where we Paskin like Abaye against Rava that Edim Zomim is Lamafreya who nifsal. And therefore, if Lamafreya, she never was a sota to begin with. Why? Because there never was a valid pair of witnesses to testify on her stira. Because those Edom who testified on their stira were Edom Zomim. And if that be the case, the Brisa is justified for saying what? Mincha Sachulin. Where is it? Mincha Sachulin.
Bonlooker still doesn't know that.
Who?
Bonlookers.
The onlook, oh, excellent. But if you're like Rav Papa, who says that we have to satisfy the curiosity of the onlookers, and they don't understand this whole halacha of Lamafreya, they saw that she was a sota, and they saw that they took the mincha sota, and they were kaddish in the kli. Now people are going to walk out of there thinking that you could be poed to something that has kedusha saguf, that was sanctified inside a kli. So the Gemara answers, Edim Zomim Kahamrit. Your question on Rav Papa is from Edim Zomim. Edim Zomim Kola Islay. Everybody talks about it. Splashed on the front cover of the news, the local rag, as we call it. I don't know if in other countries you use that idiomatic phrase, but it's on the local rag. You open up the newspaper in the morning and you hear about Edim Zomim. Everyone's schmoozing about Edim Zomim. Everybody knows that these witnesses were found to be Edim Zomim. And therefore, Rav Papa holds that in this case, we're not going to apply the gzeira of Shema Yomru Motzim Kli Sharis Lachol, because everybody knows that this pair of witnesses, and it makes sense, by the way, because imagine two witnesses testify that this woman was guilty of adultery. You know, if we could only disprove those witnesses and clear her record, you know, everybody wants to know. By the way, in certain countries, you're not even allowed as a spectator to enter into the courtroom. I think in England you are, but I don't even know. There may be rules. Do you have to wear that wig if you go in? No.
That's the judge.
Only the judges have to wear
Barristers.
Yeah. But in Jewish law, you'll see over and over again that the spectators were there. Now, the spectators might have been there for any number of reasons, the most profound of which is what we call stage. I mean, that's what the Israelis call it. Apprenticeship, I think, would be the fancy English word for it. So what it means is that Chazal encouraged people to enter into the courtroom because you learn a lot about judicial procedure and so forth from witnessing and observing what goes on in the court. And imagine there are people sitting in the court and they find out that, number one, her reputation is being cleared and the witnesses that testified against her that she was guilty and she had a stira are all a bunch of liars. And not only that, now we're going to do to them what they wanted to do to her, and the law of Edim Zomim is going to apply. So that's called Kola Islay. Now we're going to stop here. I'm going to leave you with one question for those who are curious. There is a principle called Lo Plug. Have you ever heard of it? A lot of halacha
is based on a principle called lo plu, which means that we don't make distinctions. Right? For example, let's say you and I are eating milchiks and fleishiks, you're eating milchiks, I'm eating fleishiks on the same table. So under certain conditions, that's not allowed. And the Gemara says that the Rabbanan made a gzera that maybe you'll eat from me and I'll eat from you and so forth and so on. So it could be that there are certain situations where it's impossible for me to eat from you and you from me. Like let's say, for example, we're on different sides of the room, different sides of the table, but we're going to apply a principle called lo plug. Lo plug means we're not going to make distinctions. We're not going to go into the nitty gritty and the nuances of every single scenario and decide whether the gzera should apply or it shouldn't apply. Once there are going to make a gzera, it applies straight across the board. I'm not sure what this is called in secular law, but there's something in Latin that also describes this in secular law. So that's called lo plu. Now imagine, under any situation other than this one case of Edom Zomamim, we would have applied this principle of lo plu. We would say, if you're worried about what the onlooker might think and come to the impression that you could be posed as something that was sanctified in a klisharis, we're not going to say, well, in this particular case, you know, we made a public announcement so people know. It's a glow plug. It's an enactment. Why is this case of Edom Zomim different? Just because it has a kol and people know about it. So in order to answer that question, and with this I'll leave you, we have a principle called Milsa de lo shchicha lo gazru be'rabbanan, which means that if something is unique, it's very unusual, it's not a common occurrence, it's not included in a decree. For example, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very famous tshuva in which he allows drinking milk in America and presumably in other countries. He was talking about America, even though there's no Jewish supervision. And that's called Cholav Akum. And he goes on to say that, just one second, what was his psak about Yayin? Just give me a second. Oh, and then he goes on to say that although we don't drink non-Jewish wine, however, if you have a kosher bottle of wine, and a guy lifts it up, let's say it's open, and he pours out some of it, I'm just being dramatic, I don't need all those conditions. Says Rav Moshe, although the halacha made a gzera in this case, and said you're not allowed to drink the wine once he lifts it up, if it's cooked wine, which I guess is something like pasteurized wine, then, says Rav Moshe, you're allowed to drink that wine. Now what happened if the Rabbanan made a gzera and they said you can't drink wine if the guy, you know, shakes the wine or whatever it is, why is it different if it was cooked wine? So Rav Moshe says that in the day of Chazal, back in the day, it was very rare to pasteurize wine the way we do today. I mean, they could do it back in the day, but generally speaking, they wanted very strong wine. And it was unpasteurized wine. For example, we have wines today that are dry wines that are not mevushal, they're not cooked in any way, they're not pasteurized. It gives a certain freshness to the wine. I mean, I'm not a connoisseur, but those who appreciate dry wine, which I find intolerable, but I drink it anyway, that's the difference for my stomach. But for those who love dry wine, they'll tell you that they can tell the difference between wine that was cooked and wine that's not. And back in the day, they didn't cook their wines. So Rav Moshe says that a milsa de lo shchicha lo gazru be'rabbanan, something that's not shchiach, it's not common, it's very rare, is not included in the original gzera. And I would say the same thing perhaps applies here in our Gemara and Sotah. That Edom Zomim is something rare. And I'll tell you why, as you pointed out, Mr. Carroll, before. Are you a rabbi or a doctor? No, I can call you Mr. Carroll. And as Mr. Carroll said before, you know, the Edom Hamazimim, these guys, they're in deep trouble too. Because if two witnesses will come in now and testify against them, that they couldn't have been together with the Edom Hamuzamim in that place, because they were with us in the third place, they get killed for that. So Edom Zomim is a very rare kind of phenomenon, and then it becomes a milsa lo shchicha, and we don't apply the principle of lo plu. Okay, then everyone should have a great Shabbos, and please don't dream about Edom Zomim, because... But you can dream about the word l'mafreya. That's something that you want to think about.
Can I just ask a question? Yeah. That
Alan, do me just one favor. Open the door if you don't mind, because I teach a Chumash class now, and I just want to make sure I don't lose my guys, you know. And this, Yaakov, I want to return to you. Thank you so much.
I'm lost on the process.
Is this yours?
No.
Who owns this? I'm curious.
I don't know.
Because I may want to borrow it once, but I want to know who owns it. Yeah.
What is the process? To me, she's originally brought up by her husband. She's at...
She's what? I didn't hear. No, that I heard.
She's at the temple.
Oh, at the temple. Okay, that I didn't hear.
You've got the Aiden there, and there's you in front of a basin.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you've got a gathering of people. The decision could be a mile away, you could be waiting for other Aiden. What is the process? No, it's not like a normal.
You mean how long do we give it?
Yeah.
I think if I'm not mistaken.